You're going to be very happy.
Episode of the Living the Dream podcast. Today, we have a very, very special episode if I can speak English. We have a very special episode and a very special guest, a good friend of mine, my good buddy, Micah Allen. Micah, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Watched a pretty sick movie with the boys last night. Watched USA absolutely clap Canada in USA in some Olympic hockey last night for the first time in years. And yeah, we're chilling, bro. We're chilling.
Dude, I hate that I missed that game, but I saw the final score and I was so happy. I was just like, let's freaking go. I didn't want to watch the Olympics just purely because I hate China, but I was just like, I do want to watch some hockey. But I ended up missing the game, but for a pretty nice game of poker that I got a funny story about in a second. But yeah, no, I saw the score and I was just absolutely hyped.
You know, I feel I'm a big Olympics guy, always been a big Olympics guy. My mom was a big Olympics person. She would always get us to watch summer, winter, whatever it was. I'm always preferred a winter game guy. Curling, bro. Curling is the most underrated sport in the history of athletics. Like, bro, I'm telling you, it's the best sport ever.
And why is that?
Dude, I don't know what it is, but it's just so mesmerizing to watch. I could watch curling for hours. I watch curling in Mary Prentice's class almost every single freaking time I sit down in there. And but yeah, dude, it was great to watch because like the amount of heartbreaking USA Canada moments in the Olympics that I've had as a kid, and they absolutely went out there. They outskated them. They outhit them. They outphysicaled them. They did it in the neutral zone. They couldn't stop our forecheck. It was beautiful.
Dude, let's freaking go. I love hockey. I love USA. So the fact that we beat the Canucks, those freaking maple syrup drinking.
That was what I texted my brother. My brother's like 14, and we were texting about the game, and he was like, I suck at Canada. And I was like, go drink some maple syrup or something. Like, bro, get off our ice.
Oh, my Lord. No, again, I was going to watch it, but I ended up getting wrapped up in a poker game, and I was going to leave. I was going to leave the game. So I was like, okay, this next hand, I'm going to go all in no matter what. I'm going all in. I went all in and ended up drawing a straight and just stayed in the game for another hour.
Dang, bro. You love to see it.
I love how
draws.
Like I get the good luck on the hands that I'm trying to get out. And then anytime I'm trying to like actually play, I get the worst luck in the world. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to bed all in. I get a straight.
You know, okay, can we talk for a second? Have you gone to this new Lynchburg, like this new milkshake place that everyone's been posting about? With, like, the super, like, overly overdone milkshakes. John Sharp posted it yesterday.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Oh, wait, are you talking about? Yeah, I saw that on a story.
So I looked it up. I was like, because me and my buddies, like, we wanted to go because we were like, this seems sick, right?
Uh-huh.
So I was like, these have to be more expensive than normal, right? So, like, I went to go look up the price. I'm thinking it's going to be, like, $5, $6, $7 at most. The milkshakes there cost between $12 and $15 a piece.
What?
$12 and $15 a piece for a milkshake. You get to keep the mason jar.
There's a mason jar?
It comes in a mason jar.
Okay, that's kind of dope. Okay, I kind of get it now.
$12 and $15. That's like a one-time, one-date ever kind of thing like we're talking about.
Yeah. Can you? I wonder if you can take the mason jar back.
Imagine
and get
the
it
margins.
Refilled?
Imagine the business margins they make on those.
Dude, that has to be crazy.
Those things do not cost $3 to make. Maybe five.
I think
five at most.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you can get like a pack of them for like $5.
You know what you can also get for $5?
What?
A McDonald's milkshake. Oh, you want to know you can get two for $15? True. Two cookout trays.
Dude, okay, no, hold up. You know what somebody was telling me yesterday? They were telling me about, they went to Texas Roadhouse.
Ooh.
And they got a 6-ounce steak.
That's tiny.
A potato and a salad.
I'm a 12-ounce ribeye guy.
For like, same. bro, I can down a 16-ounce steak in a second.
I meant 16, my bad. I can't count.
Anyway, They got a 6-ounce steak, which, like you said, it's not that big, but still. 6-ounce steak, a potato salad, and a drink for like $10.99 on Fridays. He said he went to Burger King and got a Whopper with cheese. And it was almost the same price.
How?
I don't freaking know.
He had to have used like a gift card or Flames Cash or something.
I don't know. It was a dude that works for the Freedom Center. It wasn't a student, but still, like, I was just like, bro, what?
That's wild, bro.
Yeah.
I'm a big 2-for-5 Whopper guy. When they got that deal, that's unbeatable.
I don't.
And unfortunately, the Charlotte Airport, which I will not go on a rant about because I hate so much, does not have that deal. And
I kind of want you to go on this rant.
I hate Charlotte Airport.
Okay.
I really hate it. I have never had a positive experience. Now, this is probably mostly because I'm normally going. I live in Rochester, New York. So I usually fly. Lynchburg's airport only services Charlotte. So I'll fly to Charlotte, and then I'll take Charlotte to Rochester. And it's usually small planes. So I'm usually in, like, the dumpy old F-wing, which is gross. But whenever you have to move, there's no tram, there's no nothing. And I'm not going to complain about that. Places like Atlanta are great. But I'm not – I mean – but you don't have to make it – you can make it like Newark, where in Newark, like, they make their airport circular. So it's not a far walk.
Okay.
I walked from F to A. It took me 15 minutes.
Okay, see, I've never been in an airport, so hearing this to me, I'm like, I have no idea what any of this means, but to all those that have flown before, let me know.
Yeah, Charlotte Airport, my buddy Isaac, I don't know if you met him, he came here one time, but like, he was the first one to tell me about how bad it was, and I had one experience with it, it wasn't that bad, I stayed in B, grabbed Starbucks or whatever, but like, my family, last Thanksgiving break, we went to Arizona, like, for vacation.
Okay.
And I met them in Charlotte.
Oh, no.
And so we were both flying from, again, we were flying from, we had to go get on a big plane to go across the country because this is from Charlotte, North Carolina to Phoenix,
Arizona.
To Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah.
So we go over, we get on this big plane. My whole family, including
my 10-year-old
sister.
Do you remember what you flew?
American.
Okay.
I'm forced to use American most of the time. I like Delta because they have Cheez-Its.
We're not sponsored.
Yeah, this
I promise.
This is definitely not sponsored.
But if you'd like to sponsor us,
American,
I'll eat Cheez-Its on every episode.
As long as I get a cut, American, I love you. You're the best airline. No, I haven't had too many like bad experiences with American. In all honesty, like I honestly haven't had any real bad things with it. It's just like average,
Fair enough.
No real issues. Like there's nothing special about it though. Like a lot of people, like Southwest, you don't have to pay for checked bags. Like Delta, you get Cheez-Its. Like there are preferences. Like United, they have like those biscotti cookies. Oh, they're so good. But, like, I mean, because food's what matters at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
But, I haven't had any real issues with Americans. It's just not ideal. But my 10-year-old we all have carry-on bags because we're poor. And my dad is a legend at getting deals. We're not rich. We did not just fly to Arizona for fun. This was probably the biggest trip that our family's ever done. And probably the biggest trip that our family will be until I'm rich and I pay for everybody. But
it's a big if.
Yeah, it's a big if. This is why you marry rich.
Find a girl with money.
Find a lawyer. My government worker's salary is not going to pay for this. So my 10-year-old sister, like, has to take her freaking carry-on bag the whole way.
Oh, no.
Like, dude, this is a 15-minute walk. There's 6 of us. I have 3 siblings. They're all younger than me. I'm only 19. I'm not that old. Like, 17, 15, like, and the 15 one, love Matt to death, but bro, he likes to complain a lot. That was a long 15-minute walk.
Oh, I bet.
However, the good thing is that they have Bojangles in B-Wing. I didn't go there. I got Wendy's last time I was there.
You got Wendy's.
It was the best option, like, considering everything that was around at the time.
Okay, but the sweet tea, the difference between the sweet tea.
Imagine ever drinking sweet tea on purpose. I'm from the North, bro.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will be the last time Micah is ever invited on this podcast.
Bro, I'm telling you, sweet tea is like good for like 3 sips, and then that's the end of it.
I think that you're wrong, but you're.
I'm
also
a bit.
From
no,
New
don't
York.
Get me wrong. I'm a big iced tea guy. But sweet tea is not it. Like, give me Arizona. Give me Arnold Palmer. Give me.
I will. Okay.
Peace
okay.
Tea.
I will
peace
concede.
Tea. Okay. I have a hot take. Peace Tea, the most underrated gas station beverage of all time.
I've never tried it, so I have no opinion.
Get some at the Grid sometime.
Okay. I will concede that I think sweet tea is probably an acquired taste. And by acquired, I mean if you didn't grow up drinking it, you're probably
like baseball.
Hate it. Yeah, like
I'm a big Yankees fan because I grew up with it, but everyone I talk to about baseball that hasn't grown up with it hates it.
I've never grown up with baseball. I hate it. I think it's boring. But then, I mean, that doesn't mean that, like, if I actually, yeah, probably I went to a baseball game one time. I hated it. But I was going to say, like,
was it
hockey,
a Liberty baseball game?
No. When I was in, I want to say, 9th or 10th grade, they took us to a baseball game in Charlotte. It wasn't.
Was it like a AAA team or something?
I can't remember. I've been to two baseball games. I went to a Charlotte game on a church trip. I've been to more baseball games than I think.
Yeah.
I keep thinking, I'm like, oh, I have been to like multiple games. I'd never enjoyed one of them, but I went for like, I think at least two or three of them. Yeah, at least three, maybe four were because I did youth choir in high school at church, and we sang at games, and and then one of them was just a random school trip for no reason.
Yeah.
I hated it. They also took us to a Belmont Abbey basketball game one time. I hated that.
Is that like D3 or something?
I don't freaking know.
Whatever it is, it doesn't sound entertaining.
It wasn't. Then I came to Liberty. I never liked basketball, like, ever. Then I came to Liberty and went to one of the games. I'm like, okay, this is actually
kind of
hype.
I've always been a big college basketball guy, and now getting to watch Liberty play basketball is hype.
Dude, freaking Darius McGee.
Dude, man's a Nazi. I mean, I don't think he's too small to make in the NBA. But, I mean, you got guys like Isaiah Thomas that have done it. Like, there's no question about it. But I just don't think McGee is going to get there. I think he's going to stick around. Like, he'll probably be D-League, G-League, something like that. But I don't expect him to go to the NBA. But that would be hype.
Speaking of Liberty players going pro.
Oh, baby girl.
Let's talk about Malik Willis for a minute.
Oh, yeah. So his draft stock's heating up. There's no question about that.
Okay.
You're looking at a shift in the NFL about what people are looking for in prospects. Before 2017, there was a big – generally, people would look for the most NFL-ready guys, the guys who you're going to be able to plug in day one and they're going to be good. But their talent ceilings are lower. If you look across at like earlier, like first round pick quarterbacks, you got guys like Matt Ryan, you got guys like Jared Goff, first overall picks with low upside who are going to be able to plug in and be good right away. You've got the occasional Matthew Stafford sprinkled in there.
Mm-hmm.
But Eli Manning, low talent ceiling, low high floor. You're seeing a shift in what NFL teams want because of two people, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. In 2017 and 2018 in the draft processes, those two were looked at. Mahomes was looked at either QB2 or 3. I mean, he was pretty much unanimously QB3 in that draft behind Trubisky, ironically, Buffalo Bills backup legend Mitch Trubisky, and Deshaun Watson, who is very good at football, and I hope he gets a chance to play again if he's exonerated.
Yeah, wait, what happened with him?
He's been accused of several sexual assaults.
Okay.
But it also happened at the same time as like a contract dispute with the Texans. So
probably because of Urban Meyer's.
Urban Meyer's Jacksonville. Urban Meyer's gone.
I heard. Yeah, he's
long
gone.
But Texas
sucks too. Like in terms of
Texans are awful. They just they hired a guy basically to fire him this year's scapegoat. They had the opportunity to hire Brian Flores.
Like Auburn almost did with Brian Harsin.
I don't care about Brian Flores' lawsuit against the NFL. They should have hired him. Lovie Smith is he led the Bears to a Super Bowl, but he is not. He's not the new guy who's proven himself with the Dolphins. I don't know why the Dolphins fired him. But as a Bills fan, I'm a Bills fan, big Bills fan. I hate the Dolphins. I love seeing them fail. When they fired Brian Flores, I was happy. I think Brian Flores deserves better. I love Brian Flores. I think he's a great coach. But now he's out of our division, so I'm not complaining. consider this me cursing Mike McDaniel to fail. But back to the NFL draft talk. 2018, who are your guys? You had five first-round quarterbacks. You had Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield was first overall pick. Baker Mayfield is now probably about the third best quarterback from this draft class. Baker has been no better than average, and he's been heavily reliant on a supporting cast. He's been so bad that he made us think that Odell Beckham Jr. was washed. And now Odell Beckham Jr. is ripping up the playoffs with the Rams. So there's no question about the fact that Baker Mayfield should not have been picked, mostly because you got guys like Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold, and again, he was like he had a higher ceiling than some of these guys, but he also had an incredibly high floor, according to these guys. Sam Darnold, another guy that was considered turnover prone, but they liked his talent. He was a little bit more of the high upside guy. Josh Rosen was the epitome of the guy. Now, he was the fourth quarterback taken, but that fourth quarterback taken busted badly. Why is that? Because he didn't have enough support around him to support somebody with that sort of a thing. I think Joe Burrow is very similar. He's much more talented than some of these guys, but he's being helped out significantly. Like, imagine there's a big debate right now of who's better, Justin Herbert or Joe Burrow. I think it's easily Justin Herbert. He's putting up better stats on a worse team. I don't know what else to say about that. But guys like who were the two best quarterbacks from 2018? Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. You can argue for either of them. As a Bills fan, I'm going to be biased. I think it's Allen. I think he's the more talented. I think he's the guy who's going to give his team a better chance to win Super Bowls in the near future. But Allen is better than Jackson. Allen and Jackson are better than the rest. Those were the two guys that people didn't want to take the risks on. And same with Mahomes. Allen and Mahomes were very, very similar. They were the athletic guys with the rocket arms who struggled with accuracy and decision-making. Mahomes sat for a year. Allen sat for 2 weeks because Nathan Peterman was our quarterback. And then they gave him time to work it in. It took him a couple of years. Took Mahomes less time. But both of them developed into who I think are nearly indisputably the two best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. At least if you're starting a team. You could throw Aaron Rodgers in that mix.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, there's this new shift in what people want to prospect. And what people want to prospect now is these guys who, if you have the right organization, you can plug them in. You can turn them into superstars with their elite talent. And that's the category that Malik Willis falls into. Now, he's competing with a lot of guys that are not like that. Kenny Pickett, very, very high floor. I don't see Kenny Pickett being a disaster. I don't think Kenny Pickett is an elite talent. I don't think Kenny Pickett has top 10 quarterback in the NFL level upside. I think he's also a sixth year player. He's not going to get very much better than what he is right now.
Right.
And I think that guys like, again, Kenny Pickett is a good quarterback. I could see him being a solid starting caliber quarterback in the NFL. But at the end of the day, I really don't see him panning out to be like anything elite. You've got guys like Matt Corral, who has a little bit more of a talent ceiling, but it's nothing like the talent ceiling presented by Malik's rocket arm and elite athleticism. From day one in the NFL, he'll be a top 3 to 5 quarterback rushing threat. Now, you can balance quarterback rushing threat. You got guys like Josh Allen who are elite passers and elite rushers, but you've got this different thing to deal with in Malik. My best pro comparison for him is Jalen Hurts plus. Jalen Hurts has a lot of cool abilities, and he's really a well-balanced quarterback as far as like running and passing, but he just doesn't have the talent to get that elite level production up. And I think that Malik has that. But he's going to have to go to the right organization. He's going to need coaching. There's no question. He's definitely raw. He's got the talent. He needs refining. And that's what needs to be done. These guys like Matt Corral, I think he's got a higher ceiling than some of these other guys. The three guys that I'm seeing almost unanimously in the first round are Pickett, Willis, and most of the time Corral. And I think I rank them Malik, Corral, Pickett. I know that's a little bit of a hot take. I mean, honestly, Pickett and Corral can go back and forth. It depends on what you're looking for in a prospect. But at the end of the day, I think Malik is the number one quarterback prospect in the class. The question is who's going to be willing to take that risk. And the Senior Bowl and his pro day his pro day coming up, I don't know when that is, but that's going to launch his production. That's going to launch his draft stock the same way the Senior Bowl did, because people can see what he does. And that gets people enamored with him because they see what he does. He needs the coaching. There's no question about that. You've got high upside guys that have been coached out. There's no question about that. But the high reward is ending up with Josh Allen. That high reward is ending up with Patrick Mahomes. That high upside is ending up with Lamar Jackson. So it's going to come down to who wants to take that risk. And I don't know if he'll be the first quarterback taken, but I think he should be.
Okay. I know I've seen a lot of speculation about where he might go. I've heard people name the Lions. I've heard people name the Steelers. where do you think he might go versus where do you think would be the best place for him to go to get kind of that talent production that you were talking about?
I think Pittsburgh's the best place for him. I think that they already have a decent receiving core. Obviously, we'll see what happens with Juju in the offseason. Chase Claypool is a diva, but he knows what he's doing. He's a good receiver. Deontay Johnson was a top five receiver last year. We'll see if he continues that production. I don't necessarily expect top five production, but I expect top 10, maybe a top 15 production. They've got a good receiving core, and they have an elite rookie running back in Najee Harris. And they're going to need to up their offensive line. There's no question about that. Their offensive line is awful, but they have elite talent on the defensive side. And Pittsburgh is, honestly, last year, if Ben Roethlisberger isn't throwing milk jugs, that team could be in Super Bowl contention last year. If you put Allen or Mahomes on the Steelers, that could be the best team in the league last year. And or you put Rodgers on the Steelers. And that's the bigger question at hand, is where is Aaron Rodgers going to go? Because a team like Pittsburgh that's a quarterback away might go with Aaron Rodgers. A team like Denver that's a quarterback away. And some teams that aren't a quarterback away, Carolina. I've seen a lot of buzz surrounding, like you said, Detroit. I don't think he's going to Detroit. I think that's because Detroit has the Rams' first-round pick, so that's – I believe the Rams will win the Super Bowl this weekend, which would make it the 32nd overall pick. At the worst-case scenario, it would be the 31st overall pick. But I don't think Malik is going to fall that far. Whether he's within the top 32 prospects in this draft, I don't know. But because of his positional value at quarterback, he'll probably go a lot higher. I think Pittsburgh's the best fit for him. He gets great coaching. He'll be able to reach out to Ben Roethlisberger to an extent. I don't know what that'll look like necessarily. But there are all these teams in the quarterback market right now that we're really going to have to see until after free agency how everything goes, because you've got guys like Aaron Rodgers that are I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be traded. You got the Buccaneers are looking for a new quarterback. The 49ers are going to Trey Lance, so that's probably not going to be a lot of a deal. But you've got a lot of teams that are quarterback away from being in contention. And the question is, what are those teams going to do? Are they going to try to go get one of these elite quarterbacks, maybe a Russell Wilson, maybe a Deshaun Watson, whatever happens with that situation? There's so much fluidity in the NFL quarterback market right now because of those guys that we don't know what that's going to look like come draft time. So I don't know where – I really have no guess where he's going to go. If I think if the draft happened today, I think you're going to see him – I think Carolina would probably bite on his upside at six, but I could definitely see Pittsburgh making a move to get up and get him. Because I think he is that good of a fit in that offense and that style and that scheme that Mike Tomlin runs up in Pittsburgh. So we'll see how that goes. I think he's the best prospect. The question is who's going to be able to take the risk on him. And it's just too early to tell who's going to do that. And again, he needs that coaching. If he goes to the wrong spot, Malik Willis will be a flaming bust in the NFL. I don't expect that. I expect him to end up somewhere where they'll be able to at least coach him to be good. But you have to make sure he gets that coaching. If Josh Allen doesn't get his coaching, that 56% completion percentage from college is going to bleed over. It's just reality. Baker Mayfield beat Patrick Mahomes in college. A famous game. I think it was like 72-68 or something. Like a wild.
Goodness.
It was a wild score. But it was a shootout. And the other thing to look at with these small school quarterbacks too is like people like to say that their production is overhyped because they were at a small school, but they weren't playing with as good of players. Like you got guys like. You got Baker Mayfield on Oklahoma. You got Patrick Mahomes on Texas Tech.
You've got the infamous Liberty University offensive line.
Dear Lord. Dude, I was talking. I have a friend who works for the team. I won't say his name. He's on my hall. But, dude, he said that they're like, they brought in a new offensive line coach. He said they have like no offensive line recruits this year.
Oh, God.
And he said that they have. I really hope we play Caden Salter next year, bro. I mean, okay. now that I might be sticking around here longer, maybe I'd be okay with them playing. Dear God, we can't start JB. If JB starts, we're going to be so bad. Our schedule's brutal this year.
Yeah, we have. For those of you who don't know Liberty's schedule, we have two home games against BYU and Virginia Tech,
and we have away games against Arkansas and Wake Forest.
So next year is going to be a very fun year.
Yeah, especially the BYU home game,
dude. If we win.
I mean, I'm not talking even necessarily about winning. I'm just talking about the pure fact of, like, the chance. Like, bro, the hockey game against West Virginia, those chants were brutal. Imagine what we're going to do to freaking BYU.
Oh, my Lord.
It's going to be brutal.
Dude.
And I'm ready for it.
I am ready for it too, but like
my newly hired RS brain is probably going to have to kick in. But
but yeah, no dude, listen. Even if we don't win, just the pure energy in that game and the Tech game is going to be wild.
I think the Tech game is going to be wild.
If we do win either of those games,
we're storming the field.
It's going to be a riot. They're not going to be able to hold us back.
No.
There's no way.
The 85-year-old Rhino police are not stopping us.
Not at all.
Yeah, dude, for sure. But yeah, I think Malik's the best quarterback in the draft as far as a talent standpoint. I think Kenny Pickett's probably the safest bet. But yeah, Malik is – he has the highest talent ceiling. We'll see where he goes. I don't know where that'll be. Let's hope it's somewhere that'll develop him well.
All right. Okay. Backing up for a second, I know you mentioned this, so I wanted to get – I know you just – pretty much said you thought the Rams were going to win this weekend.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. What is your reasoning for that conclusion, and do you have a solid score prediction?
Okay, I'm terrible with score predictions, which is why I don't bet them. I hit a pretty decent cash out last week.
Okay.
I mean, on championship weekend. I threw – I did a double. I did – parlayed over half a receiving touchdown for Ja'Marr Chase in the AFC championship game. And I did over 2.5 shots for Alex Tuck. He's a Sabres player. Mm-hmm. Both of them hit 50 for 150. Got a fresh $175 check in the mail this week. We love to see it. We got with the Super Bowl, the Bengals, I think they're running out of luck. And I'm not even going to lie. I picked against the Bengals in every single game they've played in the playoffs. I picked the Titans. I picked the Chiefs. I picked the Raiders. I thought the Raiders were going to upset them. Joe Burrow is becoming America's sweetheart, and that's getting him extremely overrated. He does not have the physical ability of guys that I would consider top five quarterbacks. Who do I consider top five quarterbacks? Allen, Mahomes, Rodgers, Herbert, and maybe you could sneak Burrow in at five. But there's a gap between four and five because of Burrow's inability to carry a team. I think Burrow doesn't have the physical ability to do that. Now, he is smart, and a lot of people are comparing him to Brady because he's never been the most physically talented or the best at playing quarterback, but he just wins. And that is a valuable thing. I think his string of luck runs out this week. His offensive line is terrible. Like, there's no question about that. I still can't believe that they beat the Titans. I mean, Ryan Tannehill beat the Titans. Like, the Bengals did not beat the Titans. The Titans sacked Joe Burrow 9 times. That game was brutal. Like, Joe Burrow, I cannot believe he got out of that game healthy. He was getting hit left and right. That was brutal. The offensive line was so bad. And that was against Jeffrey Simmons. Okay? Jeffrey Simmons is good. But you want to talk about the defensive line the Rams have? You have Von Miller and Leonard Floyd coming off the edge, and the best player in the entire league, Aaron Donald, coming up the middle. Joe Burrow is going to get sacked out of his mind. It's going to be brutal. And I don't think he's going to have any time to throw the football. And even if you want to say, oh, well, Joe Burrow's good because he makes quick decisions, they have Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey is probably going to have Ja'Marr Chase locked down most of the game. Ja'Marr Chase is a great, great receiver, but Jalen Ramsey is the best corner in the league.
Did you see the Jalen Ramsey quote floating around Instagram about a week ago about what he would do against big-time receivers in college?
No.
He said that anytime he was going up against a big-time receiver before the game, he'd slide in his girlfriend's DMs on Instagram.
That sounds like such a Jalen Ramsey thing to do. He's so cocky, but it's funny. But yeah, going back to that, like, I just don't see a world in which – and I think this game's going to be one on the defensive side. Like, I think the Rams are going to be good on offense. Like, you know, Matthew Stafford will get the job done. Just can't let the Bengals hang around too much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say 34-20 Rams.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to be super close. Maybe it's close, like, at halftime. Maybe there's a little bit of separation, like, at the third quarter. But I think the Rams went by 2 touchdowns. I'm giving the Rams 34-20. Rams cover the spread. I think it's -4.5 right now. But there's just no way that I think Joe Burrow is going to be able to handle the Rams defense. They have a deep Ram. If you look at what maybe if you every strength that the Bengals have is equally matched, if not better, on the Rams defense, like offensive defensive. I don't even really think we need to talk very much about the Rams side of things. I think the Rams will put up, you know, I think the Rams are going to put up like 30, 34, 35 points, something in that range. I think they'll score on them, and I'm not worried about that happening at all. And because the Bengals have a good defense, but it's not great. They schemed well against the Chiefs. And if you look at the Bills, like, if the Bills schemed well against the Chiefs on that 13-second drive, if they weren't playing the corners, why would they play the corners? The Chiefs had two timeouts. There were 13 seconds left. Why are you letting Travis Kelce go wide open in the middle? We lost that game because of coaching. Like, and it's painful to say that because it's not something that's going to change, and it's something that is just a genuine mistake, and you can't make excuses about it. But the reason the Bills lost that game was because of coaching. Our players brought it. Well, the defense didn't. But but our defensive coaching blew the game. The Bengals made the right decision. The Chiefs should not have been playing the Bengals that week. The Bills' defensive coordinating made a major mistake that the Chiefs exploited. And they got lucky with that. And obviously, again, I'm not saying the Chiefs got lucky. The Chiefs got there because the Bills made a crucial mistake. But the Chiefs got because of a crucial mistake that really shouldn't happen in an NFL game. And then the Bengals made the proper defensive adjustments and beat them in the second half. Will that happen again? I find it hard to believe that that'll happen again because the Rams' diversity of weapons and receiving core. But either way, I think the Rams will score 28-30. Again, I said 34-20. I think they score 34 points. I really don't think the Bengals are going to be able to score much. Joe Burrow is just not going to be able to bail them out of a hole. Like, again, weak offensive line, hurts Burrow's decision-making time. He's a quick decision-maker. His number one receiver is locked down by Jalen Ramsey. They have a deep core of corners, and they have, like, five starting-level corners. And you've got good safeties on the back end. And this is a defense that stayed good even though they lost their defensive coordinator to the Chargers last year. So, at the end of the day, I don't think the Bengals are going to be able to score enough points to win this football game. I just don't see a way that that'll happen. And I guess this is where we'll find out if Joe Burrow really has that winning instinct. But I say we take a step back on Joe Burrow and realize that he's being helped a lot by his team. And he's a great player. But he maybe end up being very similar to Brady, which obviously isn't a bad thing.
Yeah.
But Brady has only won 18.6% of his playoff. It's either 18.6 or 18.9% of his playoff games without a top 10 defense. Aaron Rodgers, 81.9%. Patrick Mahomes, 100% of his playoff wins are without a top 10 defense. That says something. And yeah. It really says something. And you've got Josh Allen, who has absolutely no receivers and no running game to work with.
So, speaking of Brady, we all know what Brady has said, and we all know what the internet has said, but I want to hear what Micah Allen has to say. Is this the end of Tom Brady?
It's too good to be true.
It's too good to be true.
I'm a Bills fan. So, therefore, when Brady leaves, it's too good to be true. There's no way that he's done. Especially, like, I believe it was like 10 minutes before we started this podcast, Gronk said... Gronk predicted that Brady will take a couple of years off to recharge, saying that guy can play at any age. Now, it's Gronk. Gronk isn't exactly the brightest guy on the planet. But at the same time, it wouldn't shock me at all. The moment he does it, but it's not going to shock me. But I'm just going to say that he's not going to. He's been in the league for so long. He played 22 years of like the most physical sport in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the most physical position, but like... He won 7 Super Bowls on 2 different teams. Like, he has nothing left to prove. He's the NFL leader in literally every major passing stat. Like, maybe the only thing that I can think of that Brady has left to prove is that he won a Super Bowl on more teams than Peyton Manning did, which would be 3 because Peyton Manning won 2. And Brady's now also won 2, which I think was part of the reason why I wanted to go to the Bucs, was to get up on Manning for that. Like, the first quarterback to win a Super Bowl with 2 different teams was Peyton Manning, 2nd, now Tom Brady. But, and also because New England is mismanaging, but at the end of the, which is rare from New England, but I don't think Brady's coming back, like mentally. But at the same time, when he does come back, I won't be shocked.
I don't think he's coming back, but when he does.
Yes, exactly.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Yep, it's a wild time in the wild, wild world of sports right now, but it's also a wild time in just the world in general.
Oh, dear Lord.
we're gonna start off talking about everybody's favorite country right now, Ukraine.
Well, what are your thoughts on this? I want to hear you first.
You want to hear me? Okay, so first off, I do want to do a quick update. Secretary Blinken, which I hate saying that, has God, why could Trump have not won again? Secretary Blinken has come out and said that, and there's a lot of people kind of pushing the idea that Russia could invade Ukraine as soon as Tuesday, this coming Tuesday.
Yeah.
Which does fit a very so I'm in a military history class right now. So this kind of stuff is fresh on my mind. This is what I'm learning about. The Russians, if they do decide to invade Ukraine, which at this point I think is all but given, they have to do it before.
I don't think it's given.
You don't?
I think there's a chance it doesn't happen.
Interesting.
I think that, I mean, I haven't heard. I know that Biden had a phone call with Putin today. Do you think that anyone's really willing to do this? I know it's Russia, but do you think they're really willing to do this? I'm not going to say whether it's going to happen or not, but I would tend to believe it's not going to end up happening. Think about how many dramatic, like, war-inducing things, especially with the way the media treats things today. And obviously, this is much more realistic. There's a lot more evidence on hand here. But Tuesday is in the middle of the Olympics.
That's true.
Are they really that stupid?
That's true. Okay, but here's the thing. Okay, let's step back from, are they going to do it? Because part of me does think that...
It's more of a gut feeling on this end.
That's fair. Part of me does want to believe that they're not willing to risk starting a third global war.
But it is Russia.
It is, yeah. Russia. But part of me wants to believe Putin is smart enough to not want to start a third global war that could end up in nuclear catastrophe. Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un, I'm not as willing to say that about, because God knows what could happen on that side of the world.
Yeah.
But let's focus over... I'll get to
they
that.
They don't even
in
have
a
the technology.
I'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
I'm going to focus on Russia for a second. Let's not worry about if, but... Or let's not worry about is it going to happen or is it not. But if it does happen, this is... Russia needs to do it before the ice thaws in that area of the world. Looking back at history, especially the campaigns of Napoleon and the campaigns against the Germans. In Ukraine, as soon as the ice thaws, which is early March, or into March, a little bit into April, that time period, it gets so muddy. They will, if they choose to go into Ukraine, they have to do it soon, because if they don't, they're going to get bogged down and probably slaughtered. Because the mud...
But is Ukraine any more, like, outfit to take that on?
I don't know. But if it does end up being a third world war scenario and you get the U.S. involved, which, God, I hope does not happen... It's possible that it could be the world's – it will be a slugfest. Because, okay, let's take a step back. Look at World War II history. When the Germans invaded the Soviet Union and then the Soviet Union pushed back, Kiev and Kursk were two of the largest battles that happened in that area. Stalingrad aside. Stalingrad was probably the worst battle of World War II in terms of how many people just got slaughtered. But if you look at Kiev and Kursk, it was tank warfare in the open fields of Ukraine. And things very, very quickly got out of hand because of the ice falling and how muddy it got. And it did end up being a slight advantage for the Russians, because they were a little bit more used to it then. And the Germans weren't as so. One of the biggest mistakes in history... I feel weird saying that we should learn something from Adolf Hitler, but if you learn anything from Adolf Hitler, and if you learn anything from Napoleon Bonaparte, it's this.
Don't attack Russia in the winter.
Do not attack Russia in the winter. It will go very poorly for you. But anyway, so you don't think that...
I'm hesitant to believe that it's going to happen.
Okay.
Think about the amount of world tensions that have been hyped up to us over the past, specifically 10 years.
Interesting. Okay.
The one that comes to mind the most is North Korea nuking Guam. There are so many scenarios where things happen. People start thinking A, B, and C is going to happen. Mm-hmm. The media freaks out. Everyone gets chills. Everyone's watching things in class. Mary Prentice goes on 20-minute rants about Biden, et cetera.
Is Mary Prentice your go-to for...
She's crazy, bro.
Okay.
She's insane.
I'm going to have to come sit in one of her classes.
I've taken her in now the morning and the afternoon, and she has two different personalities. In the morning, she's like normal teacher. She doesn't teach anything. Just for reference, in Government 301, I went to her class maybe a third of the time at most.
I remember
I didn't read a single one of the assigned readings, and I got a 96.
Nice. I remember my friend Sarah told me often that she was surprised anytime you come to class.
Yeah, there's no reason for me to be in Government 302. And I'm not going to spend – I mean 301 or 302. Now, but here's the difference. 301, she didn't go on rants, and it was 8:15 in the morning, so I just skipped it all the time. I go to 302 almost every single class. I work on other homework or watch the Olympics during class, but I'm here to watch the rants. It's something else, bro. It really is something else. She's talking about transgender James Bond, and I was like, how'd you get here?
What?
I was like,
Wait, what's this class about?
It's about modern political and economic ideas.
Okay, it's kind of relevant.
No, it's about political philosophy.
Okay, maybe not.
It's so dumb, bro. But I go because it's funny. Oh, dude. It's so funny.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm hesitant to believe it's actually going to happen. And if it does, I think that the only thing that will really happen other than Russia taking over Ukraine, economic sanctions, because that's all that should happen. The problem is if we start talking about Poland, because Poland is a NATO country, and that is where you start overstepping your boundaries.
That is true. Now, I will – okay. There's a few different things I do want to say about that. One, I am hesitant to say that they will go for Poland.
I don't think they will.
Because I think
they're smart.
Yeah. Putin has on record said that he wants to reclaim the glory days of the Soviet Union. I think Putin was the one that said the quote that anyone that doesn't miss the Soviet Union is a fool, and that anyone that wants it back is a psychopath or something of that nature. Because, and I kind of understand it, because even though, okay, listen, the political policies of the Soviet Union were disastrous, but they were very effective at propaganda and making it seem like that they were a glorious nation to their people. Not always, because the people were.
But wasn't Putin in the KGB at the KGB at the time?
Yes.
So it's just his propaganda all over again.
Exactly.
Okay, I see you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what he wants, I think what he wants is he wants to propagate this idea that he wants to bring back the glory days of the Soviet Union without the political policies, of course, which, I mean, at the same time, some of his political policies very scarily resembling. Then again, some of the policies of our current president are very scarily resembling, but that's besides the point. But I think the biggest thing with Russia, and I think the reason I don't want to see Ukraine taken over, but I think the reason that we should just let it happen if it does, he wants
economic sanctions.
He wants nothing more than a buffer zone. He does. All he wants is to kind of have a buffer between him and NATO. That's all he wants. That's all Russia. All Russia has ever wanted in their history.
But Ukraine is that buffer right now. It's not under Ukrainian control, and it separates them from NATO countries.
Yes. But I think in his mind, the only way to ensure they don't join NATO is to...
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes. Okay. Yeah, I forgot that he was trying to stop them from getting NATO, joining NATO.
That's the only way he can ensure it doesn't happen is to just take the country. Now, the question in my mind is if Russia invades, if they'll actually just keep control of it, or if they'll just set up a proxy state. I think the latter. Because that would be the buffer zone that they need.
I don't think they're going to... I don't think Ukraine becomes any sort of...
I think you saw a similar thing play out. I think it was about a decade ago when they took Georgia in the Caucasus region.
I don't remember that happening.
I was young. I don't really remember it well, but from the little bit I've read about it, it looks like a similar scenario.
Okay.
They just set up a proxy state.
That's kind of what I'd expect, too. I mean, especially because they're so, like, ticked off of Ukraine. I don't expect them to give them, like, the rights of being a Russian state.
Now, the thing that scares me is not necessarily what's going to happen in Ukraine. The thing that scares me...
As an American citizen.
As an American citizen. The thing that scares me is... If Russia takes Ukraine and everybody's attention is turned toward Ukraine, that's going to give China an opportunity to go full force on Taiwan. Will that happen? I don't know.
No, it won't happen. That's too big of an issue. It's too big of an issue. Like, if it was a smaller issue, that would be one thing. Like, China might get a lot of things done, like, under our noses kind of thing. And you saw Putin was with Xi Jinping at the beginning of the Olympics. So maybe there was something going on there. I don't anticipate that. But I really don't think that something as big as getting, like, as annexing Taiwan will happen.
It might not, but the thing is that all signs are pointing toward it happening within the next 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that necessarily, unless we get another Republican president in 2024.
That's fair.
Or I shouldn't even say a Republican president. I should say a president who actually, like, knows
is
how
competent.
A president who can run a military.
Yeah. Now, but the thing that scares me about the China-Taiwan situation isn't necessarily us getting involved, because, listen, I love the United States. I'm probably the largest supporter of the United States ever.
George but Washington, Thomas Jefferson,
I am
John Adams.
I am reincarnation of all of them.
Okay, stop talking.
Okay. Anyway, but something that, again, I've been learning about. I took a class last semester on East Asian warfare and the history of East Asian warfare, and now I'm taking a class on modern American military history.
Did you mean was that Asian warfare? Or was that like politics of Asia?
No, it was East Asian warfare.
Oh, okay.
It incorporated.
That's a Audubon class.
Yeah. No, it's not politics of Asia. Now, there were obviously politics incorporated because in all warfare there is politics.
Yeah.
A country to be watching and a country to be maybe a little wary of, and this might surprise you, is Japan.
How come?
Historically speaking, Japan is an island nation. It's made up of thousands of islands. It has, in many ways, been historically divided. But the way that they were able to reorganize Japan and make it into a solid, like, state like we see today is under the rule of the samurai. And there have been different waves of a samurai-like military force coming into power, the most recent being during World War II. Japan has not been quiet about the fact that they are attempting to remilitarize.
Yeah.
Japan and China have historically been huge rivals.
Yeah.
I don't think that Xi Jinping is worried about us as much as he's worried about Japan. And if you start seeing Japan start remilitarizing and tensions flare up, I think if Japan and China go at it, that's going to be the
Well, Japan is NATO.
Yes.
So that Japan and China going at it signals World War III. But I hate that word World War III because I really don't think it's ever going to happen. I know that's correct. I mean, well, until end times. But like,
how do we know we're not there?
There are several prophecies that haven't been fulfilled
yet.
We're getting close, but we're definitely not there yet.
That's true. That's fair.
Look for the idea that we're getting close to 7,000 years in the Earth, though.
That's if you're a young Earth creationist, which I'm sure not all of my audience. I am, but I'm sure not everybody listening is. But anyway, yeah. That's a whole nother issue for a whole nother
The number
day.
Seven, just keep that in mind. Seven billion. 7 billion. Try that.
Seven is a very biblical number.
Seven is a very biblical number.
It is. For those of you that don't know, seven is in biblical text represents completion. It represents holiness. It represents the number of God. So anytime you see the number seven.
40 as well.
40 as well. Anytime you see the number seven or the number 40 in anything referencing biblical text, pay attention.
Yeah. And no, I mean, I won't go super deep into that just because I haven't done a ton of research. But like, if you are a young Earth creationist, we're getting pretty dang close to about 7,000 years on the Earth. I mean, if you think about it, you got like roughly 4,000 years BC, 2,000 years on this end. Maybe we aren't the maybe we are the final generation. Maybe we're not. But the end, at the very least, it's getting close. I mean, you see a lot of things. Obviously, a lot of people thought things were going to happen after like Israel got their land back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But also you see a lot of things like the statue outside of the UN, which was quickly taken down.
Right.
But
that was weird.
That was really weird. I was like, I had a double take with that. They did take it down, but it still makes me think, especially because the UN is probably the most likely scenario for like the Antichrist to actually it's probably the most likely avenue that he'll work through. We don't know. We obviously don't know, but it's definitely like one of the more likely options, if not the most likely option. And I'm not just saying this because I've watched Left Behind. Which, by the way, bro, have you seen like the second and third ones?
I haven't seen it.
Bro, they suck. They're so bad.
There's a common trend with Christian movies, and that's that they suck. But
yeah, that's true. The first one was decent. It was over-dramatized, but it was good.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know. My standard for Christian movies is probably way too high because my standard is if it's not Passion of the Christ, it sucks.
I've never watched Passion of the Christ. No.
We've got to fix that.
I can't handle stuff like that.
Okay, that's fair.
I know that it makes me sound like the weakling, but like I was watching a movie last night. I was watching – it's called – I forget what it was called. What was it? It was called – oh, yeah, Ready or Not. It's basically like a horror movie. It's like a horror/thriller movie. Basically, this woman like marries into this family, and they have like this ritual where like you have to play like a board game or a card game or something to like be initiated into the family. And there's like a million. They put like a card into like this box, and like a spirit like tells you which game they're gonna play. And I'm a horror movies guy. I can do like demonic horror movies, stuff like that. Like, I can do that. I can't do gore. So like I'm watching this movie. It was pretty good. But then, like, the occasional thing will happen where, like, she, like, hit her hand on a nail and, like, it went through. And I was just like, this kid, like, shot her through her hand. And I was like, oh, like, that was tough. Great movie, though. I didn't see the end because they said it got really bad. So I left because I wanted to watch the hockey game anyways. I still need to check with the boys to see how the movie ended. Excellent movie. Highly recommend.
Yeah. No, don't get me wrong. It's hard for me to handle stuff like that, too. But the thing is, it's such a beautiful movie. It feels weird saying that because of how much like graphic stuff there is, but I think that's part of what makes it beautiful is you get a glimpse into what it was like for Jesus to actually go through the crucifixion, which I'm just saying, what's in that movie is only a fraction of what it was really like. But Passion of the Christ has been and probably until I die will be my gold standard for Christian movies, and yeah. I've not.
It's the number one rated R movie of all time.
Exactly.
I was talking to my friend Michael yesterday, and he was saying like, if Christians can continue to make entertainment like that in general, not just movies, art, music that actually like reaches that quality and preaches Christian, it doesn't even need
to be. You don't want to get me started on this because it pisses me off how we worship a God that is so infinitely creative and we are so freaking cookie cutter bullcrap.
We're so cookie cutter because people aren't willing to step outside their boundaries anymore. They're so comfortable. If you look at the church, like the church, the reason that it's gone so off track in the last 2 years is because the comfortable thing is to say the right thing. The comfortable thing shouldn't be to say the right thing. The comfortable thing is to stand for the truth and love.
Exactly.
And it all reminds me of this verse in 1 Timothy. Give me a second to get okay. Give me the exact reference. I have it saved because I come back to it often. And this is one of the things that makes me think that we're definitely in the end times. This is 2 Timothy 4:3-4 ESV.
The extra spiritual version for those.
Yes, the best version, by the way.
Amen. For those of you that use the nearly inspired version, we're sorry.
If you read the gender neutral pronouns version, I won't judge you.
Only a little bit.
And if you read KJV, you're just old.
You're either old or way too smart for me.
My church back home preaches out of KJV.
That's terrifying.
The teaching is based. The teaching is based, but they teach out of KJV.
Like I said, if you read KJV, you're either old or way too smart for me, and both of those scare me.
Kind of facts. Okay, so for the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching, but have itching ears that they will accumulate for themselves. Their teachers will suit their own passions. They will turn away from listening to the truth and wander off into myths.
Elevation Church?
Dude, my family loves Elevation, and I'm always like,
no.
They're like, I try to keep my mouth shut about it because, like, I know that they're like, I know that they know what they're talking about. They just like choose to ignore things that they don't necessarily listen. They don't take everything to heart. Like, they discern like what's right and wrong, but they're not willing to like stay away from
it. You know what the worst?
Give me some David Platt.
You know what the worst? You know what the worst thing about Stephen Furtick is?
Huh?
When he started out, he wasn't like that.
Really?
He was sound.
Really?
And the money. I think it was the money that got to him.
I don't know. We'll have to, I'd have to do.
Listened to some of his earlier sermons, and I haven't personally, but I've heard from people that knew guys that he went to one of the premier Southern Baptist seminaries in America. The dude got sound teaching when he was in seminary, and I've heard from people that went to seminary with him that said that he was nothing like he is today when he was in seminary.
Dang. I don't know enough to speak on that, but especially when it comes to issues like that, but yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, but yeah, you see things going on like the UN, like the statue outside of the UN, that was really weird.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder if that's just a signal or like what it is. But at the same time, I don't think World War III is really going to happen until then. I mean, just like the mutually assured destruction.
Yeah.
Like, are we really going to have another major world war that's actually fought on the ground?
That is a fair question.
Like, are we really going to do that? Are we really going to do that when we could just drop nukes on people's cities? And I don't mean that in the purely logical sense that it is. But when we could just drop a nuke on, like, their major cities, drop a nuke on their capital, wipe out their country. Russia's in Europe. We drop a nuke on Moscow. I mean, I don't know if they can stop it. Like, and that's the thing is, like, the anti-nuclear stuff. But, like, are they really going to stop that? What's stopping people from doing that? And I'm not saying that I would do that. I'm just saying if you think about it, it would make a lot more sense to just blow up Moscow and let Russia go to crap than just – and sit in the United States. I mean, they're way over there. Like, that's not going to hurt, you know?
That would be the logical thing to do. But it's also the thing that kind of – the idea of mutually assured destruction, I don't think anybody's willing to take that risk. Of dropping a nuke,
and that's why I don't think anything's going to happen. Because are we really going to fight a ground war again? In the history of the world,
it might have. Okay, as much I know, you don't think it will, but like, do you know how much money war makes people?
War makes people money, but it's not making. I mean, you got countries like the United States; they're doing fine because of war contractors. Have you ever watched War Dogs?
No, I've heard a lot about it.
So funny. So funny. It's about, like, this guy. It's basically two guys who, like, do, like, underground defense contracting. And it's not, like, illegal, but, like, it is, like, kind of, they're quiet about it, and they just make millions. So funny. But
I've heard a lot about it. I want to watch it.
They get chased by the Taliban in one scene.
Oh, my God.
It's freaking hilarious. But, yeah, I just really don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I could see – I'm not going to say Russia won't invade Ukraine. I just don't think World War III is happening anytime soon.
Interesting.
I think global tensions are always going to be overinflated by the media.
That is also
the biggest thing.
It's very, very valid.
Like, if Russia moved one tank to the border yesterday instead of as many as they did, what do you think the media would have done? They probably would have had a very similar reaction.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been as extreme. There's no question about that. But the media reaction probably would have been very similar. So it's about looking at the whole situation.
That's
like,
true.
Obviously,
do you remember when I can't remember the freaking dude's name, but when Trump ordered that airstrike on that one, like, Irani general.
Yeah.
Did you see the freaking fallout from the media after that? And then nothing happened.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're like, we're going to war with Iran. It's like, we're going to kick their butts anyways. But, like, we're going to war with Iran. Everyone's going to die. It's all exploding. What about... Blah, 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 blah. Nothing happened. You want to know why? They did something dumb. We taught them their lesson. And they stopped doing things.
And I feel like they would have... Also, I feel like the media definitely would have ran with that a lot longer than they did if COVID hadn't have happened like a month later.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But yeah, we see the media overinflating things constantly, and I really don't think World War III is coming anytime soon. But I really don't think that Russia invading Ukraine mm-hmm. will or would be that either.
I will say a war would, historically speaking, wars do boost presidential poll numbers. But speaking of poll numbers, I have it from a good source that you are a pretty freaking good whiz with polls. And so we're going to move from foreign to domestic and focus on the fact that we are living in an election year. And election years mean polls.
Yes, sir.
So what are your thoughts on the midterms that are coming up?
So I want to preface this by saying that nobody, and I mean I have not seen one single person on YouTube, on cable news, anywhere, who knows how to properly look at polls. Republicans say that polls don't work and polls are always wrong. Democrats say that polls work because they say that they win and then Democrats win and they're right. Neither of them are correct. Polling varies by state. It's like a federal versus a state solution. Different things work for states. There's not one blanket issue that's going to help. So you've got places like Arizona. The national environment is heavily in favor of Republicans. There's no question about that. And a lot of people will be like, oh, the national environment's heavily in favor of Republicans. Arizona was only a 2-point difference, yada, yada, yada. Mark Kelly is polling at 49% right now. That raises concerns for me if I'm a Republican, because Mark Kelly, I mean, if you get to 50%, you win.
Right.
You might not even need 50%. If somebody's polling 49%, they win most of the time. I predicted Trump would win in 2020. Why did I do that? I did that because I looked at Michigan's polling and I saw that – I looked at the margin. I saw that last time it had Hillary plus one and Trump won by one. So I shifted the polling and I was like, if it has the same shift, then Trump will win Michigan. I actually think I ended up saying Michigan would go blue. But like Wisconsin or Pennsylvania would be other instances mm-hmm. of that. Both sides tend to be underestimated in polling, and it varies by state. But both sides tend to be underestimated.
In Virginia, Republicans are more often underestimated, which is why you saw Youngkin win.
They're overestimated in Virginia.
Really?
Republicans are very overestimated in Virginia.
I've always heard historically that they were under.
What's his name? Gillespie? He was only supposed to lose by 3 or 4.
Okay.
He lost by 9. Youngkin was supposed to win by like 2 or 3, I think.
And he won by
less than
half a percent.
Like 1% or something like that. So Republicans actually generally get overestimated in Virginia.
Interesting. Okay. My source was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Youngkin was up by about 2% in the RCP aggregate. Mm-hmm. I don't know what 538 was. 538's rigged, bro. I'm telling you.
Yeah. I used to trust him. I hate him now.
538 is just – it's never as accurate as Real Clear Politics. Real Clear Politics literally just objectively averages them, and that's the better option. But you have to look at the averages. Yeah, but you have to look at the averages, and they vary state by state. I think right now my personal map has either 51 or 52 Republicans. There are some interesting races. Some of the more interesting ones to look at, you've got Nevada. The Nevada Democratic Party is, like, crumbling right now. Like, it's actually wild. The Reed machine is no more, in the words of our Lord and Savior, Red Eagle Politics. The guy's insane. The Reed machine is crumbling, and the Democrats are not going to be able to hold on with the kind of candidates they're putting up, the kind of socialist agendas that they're trying to push in a state that doesn't want that. That might work in other places. But I don't know. For anybody who hasn't heard, basically a socialist caucus completely took over the Nevada Democratic Party. And they're fully controlling it now. So I think Adam Laxalt's going to unseat Catherine Cortez Masto, which is something crazy. I think her stature's been a little overrated, but she's been hyped up by some people, and I think she's going to lose. We'll see down the line. Arizona, right now, I have to take Mark Kelly because of the numbers. The numbers are showing that he's going to win re-election, and I don't know why that is. I mean, he's governed to the left of what he claimed to be. He's no Kirsten Sinema. Like, Sinema's going to win re-election in a couple of years because she's a moderate. Mm-hmm. And that's what they voted for. I don't know why Kelly is looking like he's going to win right now. That could change. They have a couple decent candidates, like Blake Masters, pretty decent candidate, and the Attorney General, Mark Brnovich, pretty good candidate too. I think that Mark Brnovich has a really good chance of winning if he gets there. And obviously we have a whole election season to go to.
Right.
But as of now, Mark Kelly's going to win Arizona if that election happens today. Georgia is my favorite race to look at.
Oh, boy.
Georgia is very interesting this year. Obviously, you've got Stacey Abrams in the governor election. It's probably going to be her versus David Perdue. So that'll be interesting.
You think Brian Kemp's not going
to? I think Brian Kemp's going down. I don't think he's going to win a re-election. I think that, like, I'm somebody, honestly, if I was voting in that primary, I'd probably vote for Brian Kemp. I don't know how much, like, people react to that.
Do you think a similar situation might play out in Texas with Greg Abbott?
Or no, I think Abbott's sticking around. Abbott's a really strong incumbent.
Okay.
He's been around for a minute, so I think Abbott sticks around in Texas. There's no real chance. I mean, isn't Beto running against him or something?
Robert Francis O'Rourke is running for governor.
I don't know. I heard somewhere that he was going to run. I don't know if he's going to at the end of the day or not.
I'm going to derail this for a second as if we haven't done this 1,000 times already. Do you remember Beto's famous "Heck yeah, we're gonna not heck
yeah, yeah.
heck yeah, we're gonna take your AR-15s"? This mother trucker the other day at a campaign rally really said in tech he was when it's politically convenient for him, he's like, "We're not interested in taking anything. I want to protect the Second Amendment law."
As soon as the national environment's not a blue national environment, he can run on whatever he wants. I mean, he can't run on whatever he wants anymore. It's a joke.
Crazy. Anyway, back to Georgia.
Georgia, honestly, like, it's probably going to be tight, like, margins-wise, but I think Herschel Walker has it in the bag. I think he's going to win.
Really?
He's going to beat Warnock. Warnock's a weak candidate. The only reason he even won in the first place is because he was against Kelly Loeffler, who is possibly, like, the top five, like, worst candidates I've ever seen.
Yeah, all
that
she sucked.
Literally all, like, she was standing there. She looks like a freaking, like, stone figure.
I think if Warnock would have went up against Purdue instead, Purdue would have had a better chance.
Purdue would have beaten Warren. Like, I agree. And I think that, what's his name? Ossoff would have won almost comfortably against Loeffler. They kind of had the two good candidates faced off against each other and the two bad candidates went off against each other. But all that Kelly Loeffler could come up with was radical liberal Raphael Warnock. She gave no reason why. And literally she addressed him in debates as radical liberal Raphael Warnock. Like, saying the words radical liberal Raphael Warnock does not resonate with people, and that's not going to win you an election. You can't just say that. It's a buzzword, but it's not going to win.
Right.
It's just not a winning strategy. And it didn't work. But I think that somebody who runs an even competent campaign, and I think Georgia is kind of a lost cause at this point.
Really?
Like, not as far like in like down the line, it's not coming back. The demographics are awful. The demographic shifts are really bad. Georgia's going blue in the near future, but it's still salvageable in the near future. And somebody like Herschel Walker could stick around for a while. He's African American, and he's conservative.
It'll be a heck of a football player.
Yeah. So I think that Herschel Walker will win that race. Some of the other interesting ones, Iowa's safe Republican. I think North Carolina is. And no, does North Carolina have an election? Yeah, North Carolina. Yeah. North Carolina has an election,
and that one's special for me. I still have no idea. Okay, so primaries have not happened yet. I still have no idea who I'm going to put. So,
Dan Forrest is running, right?
No. For the
really? I thought Dan Forrest was running.
No, that was in 2020 for governor.
No, I'm pretty sure he's running like for Senate.
No.
You're sure he's not running?
I am positive.
Let me look up.
I live in the state.
2022, North Carolina.
I think I know why you think he's running. There are more than three Republican candidates, but the three major Republican candidates right now are Pat McCrory.
Pat McCrory, the former governor. That was who I was thinking of, yeah.
Pat McCrory, former governor. Mark Walker, a representative, and Ted Budd, another representative. Trump endorsed Budd. That kind of gave him a little bit of a boost. Right now, Walker had a good start, but when you look at polling aggregates right now—
He's the lieutenant governor?
No, that's Mark Robertson.
Oh,
Robinson.
Okay. I don't know enough about
I think Robinson's going for governor in the next election cycle, but that's a whole different scenario. Anyway, if you look at polling averages right now, it's between Budd and McCrory.
Okay.
Budd has the Trump endorsement, but McCrory is still a solid candidate. There's a lot that's going into it. I haven't made up my mind about who I'm going to support because originally I kind of leaned McCrory because he was familiar to me. He was governor. I thought he did some good stuff. Both of them have things that are going to hurt them in this race.
And either way, they're facing off against a probably very bad Democrat candidate
right.
in a lean red state in a heavily right. Republican environment. So they're probably going to win.
They're probably going to win. It's just going to be interesting to see who wins the primary for me.
Yeah.
I think a big thing that hurts McCrory is the fact that he was A, endorsed by the guy he's running to replace Richard Burr, which is never good.
Well, I mean, that's actually not a bad – that's really not a bad thing.
Do you know why he's
But the problem is why his job. Normally, if John McCain, had retired before he died in Arizona and he endorsed a candidate, that candidate is going to win easily.
Exactly.
But in this case, it's quite different.
Yeah. For those of you unfamiliar, Richard Burr was caught up in a little bit of a scandal about insider
trading.
Same one
as Kelly Loeffler.
About insider trading when COVID first hit, and he was forced to not run again. But anyway, so Burr endorsing McCrory hurts him a little bit, but also so does a little thing called HB2, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I don't know what that is.
It was a very controversial transgender bathroom bill that hit North Carolina and caused a lot of economic repercussions. The NBA All-Star game pulled out of North Carolina because of it. A lot of businesses tried to leave North Carolina because of it. It was a very, very interesting time period. And I think that's part of what cost McCrory his race to Roy Cooper.
That's actually why. Does Roy Cooper even support that?
What?
The policy you're talking about.
The bathroom bill thing? No, yeah. He's a Democrat.
Well, I mean, he's a Democrat, but did he support that policy?
It was partially repealed after he became governor.
Oh, okay.
Partially. Parts of it are still in law. I don't know which parts, but parts of it are still law.
The only part of North Carolina that's better than New York? Worse than New York,
Charlotte?
I'm a New York...
Asheville?
New York native here, so...
Raleigh.
Dear Lord.
Anyway. But, yeah, no, North Carolina's going to be interesting. I think a Republican's going to win. Yeah. I'm just interested to see who. I'm just interested to see who wins.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Pennsylvania, I'm scared about. I think we're going to lose Pennsylvania, in all honesty. We don't have any good candidates.
Okay.
Our lead candidate dropped out because he was divorcing his wife or something, or his wife accused him of something. I don't even know what it was. So, but the Democrats don't really have great candidates either. I mean, maybe we'll win. I don't know. I don't think we're going to need it. But also, the bigger thing to look at is how big we can get. Because if we can get big, then we get that super favorable map in a presidential year.
Mm.
So, I mean, you're talking Montana's going to Democrat turn Republican, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. Now Joe Manchin holds a better chance at holding his seat, but still,
yeah.
But still, there's a legitimate chance that if things go well enough the next 2 years, which they may not, who knows.
Do you think it's possible Manchin might get chased out of the Democratic Party by some of the radicals?
I hope not, because I'd rather have a solid Republican out of West Virginia.
Interesting.
I'd rather have Manchin.
I mean, that's fair.
I'd rather have Manchin get beat or retired.
Yeah.
If he switches, I would love to see him switch right now, because that would give Mitch McConnell the powers that are currently held by Chuck Schumer. I don't like Mitch McConnell, but that's not the point.
Yeah.
But you catch what I mean here. Mm-hmm. It's not. If we get these seats, this does include Mitt Romney. This does include Susan Collins. Lisa Murkowski's probably getting primaried this year.
I hope.
But there's a chance with those people, we could have 60 seats in the Senate, House, and presidency after 2024.
You think we could reach 60?
If you look at the maps, it's very, very possible because of the amount of Democrat seats that are up. If you look.
Okay, that's fair.
If you look at, if you Google 2024 Senate, if you Google Wikipedia 2024 Senate elections, you'll see a map, and it'll show you all the people who are going to be playing up for re-election.
Ooh.
You have Democrats up in so many big seats, and barely any Republicans that are even defending themselves. Scroll back up to the map real quick. So you've got Democrats in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Minnesota. Montana, Ohio, West Virginia, Nevada, and Arizona. The only competitive Republican seat on the entire map is Florida, and I don't even know if that's going to be competitive by 2024.
That's fair.
Because Florida is becoming increasingly more Republican. So you're looking at if we have the best night of our lives. I'm not even going to count Minnesota. I'm going to say that we get this is all hypothetical. Arizona and Nevada are going to be, and Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania are going to be very, very close. But in the event that Republicans have a great night, you could flip Arizona, Nevada, Montana, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. That is 8 Senate seats.
You've convinced me.
8 flippable Senate seats. And you'd have to go 8-0. You'd have to go 8-0. There's no question about that. But even if we see an odd trend, and I don't expect this, but even if we see like an odd trend out of Virginia or a fluke out of Minnesota,
Virginia is up.
Are 10 seats on this map that I don't consider to be safe for Democrats.
Wow.
And there is one seat that I don't consider safe for Republicans. Republicans are going to have way more allocated resources. The Democrats are going to have to spread them everywhere. I mean, do I think the Republicans get to 60 seats? Absolutely no. But are we sitting here in 3 years from now with Ron DeSantis as president, a Republican House, and 57 Senate seats?
You think it's going to be DeSantis?
I hope it's going to be DeSantis.
Okay, same, but...
Because it shouldn't be Trump.
We can have an entire podcast about that, so I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole.
That's a fact. But yeah, I mean, I hope it's DeSantis, but... We get that favorable map next year. If we can get up to 52, we put ourselves in that position. And even if we get to like 51, we just need to get majority powers back at this point. But at the end of the day, if we have 57 Senate seats, we don't have to worry about passing the little things, because even if 5 Republicans don't like it, we'll still pass it. And obviously the filibuster is the filibuster.
Right.
But maybe this is the time to move. Now, I will say this. I'm somebody who believes that Republicans should not be the first people to nuke the filibuster. I think that we need to wait for the Democrats to do it first, because we don't want to be the ones to bite that and start the downtrend. But if Democrats do it first, then we can do it back. But could this be the time to nuke the filibuster with a comfortable majority?
I don't want to nuke the filibuster in any situation.
I agree. But I'm just playing devil's – I mean, you know I agree. But I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Could this be the time Republicans do that? Or even change it to 55 seats, because that provides a little bit of wiggle room.
That's true.
You can change the Senate rules to fit it a little bit. You don't have to completely nuke the filibuster, but you can make it 55. Hmm. So you can give yourself room to work with, you know, like Collins and like Romney on the occasional issue. But you have enough comfortable area to work with in the Senate where you could maybe make the filibuster like a little bit of a lower. Maybe you can make it 57 seats. Maybe make it 55 seats. Whatever, it may, maybe just nuke it completely. But this could be the time you see that.
Hmm.
Especially because Republicans like to take half-hearted approaches to things.
Right. I was about to say a minute ago, like, even if we do get those kinds of margins, are we going to get anything done?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big proponent of the government not getting anything done, but the problem is that we need the government to do the opposite of getting things done right now. We need to roll things back.
And are we going to see Republicans do that?
No.
Exactly.
Unless we get the only possible real solution I can see is like getting like a really nice like budget, maybe. Yeah. But like, dear God, bro. Also, if we get to like that 57, 58 seat majority, then we can start talking. I mean, obviously this wouldn't include Joe Manchin, but we can talk to people like Kyrsten Sinema, and maybe somebody like Kyrsten Sinema could be that 60th vote to cut the budget. Maybe Kyrsten Sinema could be that vote to get them over the edge. But now it's just hitting me now that Sinema and Manchin are both up for re-election. But even if they don't get those seats, like that could – and they get a couple of them here and there. Though even if they don't get to that 60, if they don't beat Manchin, they don't beat Sinema, Manchin and Sinema could be like the balanced budget votes that actually fix things like that. Do I think we're going to get out of the national debt? No, it's just too big of a deal at this point. I want to get out of the national debt. It's not realistic.
We're screwed.
We need to wait for social – the only way that the national debt's ever going to be cured is if we just let Social Security die. Social Security makes up 66% of mandatory spending.
Yeah.
No, 66% of the federal budget is mandatory spending,
yeah.
And most of that is Social Security, which is pulling money out of its butt right now because it doesn't actually exist.
If I was in power, I'd just nuke Social Security now.
There's a process to it, but
right.
But yeah.
But yeah. No, I definitely see what's going to now. What's interesting, I do. So you and I definitely agree. Republicans are 100% taking back the House in 2022.
Most likely, but redistricting has not gone well.
That's true.
I still think that there's really no realistic way the Democrats are going to keep control. But redistricting has been a lot worse than I expected.
Do you think that we could take back the Senate this year?
Yes. Okay. Easily. It's 50-50.
Now for the real question. Are we going to be able to get Manchin and Sinema to get on board and somehow hold back Romney and Murkowski and see if we can delay the Supreme Court nomination?
The Supreme Court nomination will be pushed through before the midterms.
You think?
Yeah.
I hope you're wrong, but probably.
The Supreme Court, and either way, I don't think it's appropriate to hold it out that long.
That's true.
The fact that we would be holding out our nation's highest court from hearing any cases for 2 years.
Yeah, no, that's probably a bad idea.
And it would be one thing if it was like Clarence Thomas that was retiring, but like it's Stephen Breyer.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm not.
The only thing I'm concerned about, obviously, yeah, we're just trading a progressive for a progressive, but the unfortunate thing is the progressive they're going to put in there is probably going to be a lot younger.
They're going to be a lot younger and a lot worse. It's going to be Sotomayor 2.0. Sotomayor Jr. is going to get put on the Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
But either way, they're going to vote the same way. And yeah. At the end of the day, we have, although it's frustrating as a conservative to see the cases go the way that they've gone recently, with some of the guys in the middle, at least we know nothing insane is going to happen.
That's true.
John Roberts I might even consider John Roberts to be a liberal justice. I'm on that edge. But do I think he's going to let some of this crazy stuff happen if it were to happen? No. Hypothetically, let's say the Democrats, you know, like, well, yada, yada, 60 seats, yada, 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 they, you know, universal health care. Do you really think John Roberts is going to vote to hold that up?
Absolutely not.
It's going to be a 6-3. And that's where that whole quote-unquote not so 6-3 majority thing comes in. Mm-hmm. That's where things will go. It'll stop anything crazy from happening. It's not helping us roll back anything right now.
Do you think the 6-3 majority is going to be helpful with the Dobbs case?
I think this is a hot take. I think we're going to get the outcome we want in the Dobbs case.
You think Roe v. Wade will be rolled back?
That's the problem. Mm. I think that we're going to get the Dobbs v. Jackson case, the Mississippi abortion law will stand, I believe. However, I believe that it's going to be by a plurality decision. And because of the information that comes up from that plurality decision, a lot of pro-lifers are going to think they've won and they're going to stop working. And it's going to become one of the more detrimental things to the pro-life movement.
Okay, yeah. No, I definitely...
Let me explain the plurality decision really quickly. So what a majority opinion would be 5-4 probably.
Right.
With Roberts dissenting. There's a chance we could get Kavanaugh and Barrett on board based on what they were saying in off their transcripts. That what a 5-4 decision would look like is that state, like resetting the precedent that states can regulate abortion, therefore effectively overturning Roe v. Wade. A plurality decision would probably look something like states can regulate abortion after 15 weeks, which is what the Dobbs case is about. And if they focus on that, it's really not going to change anything because 15, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say like over 90% of abortions occur within the first trimester.
I don't know if it's 90, but a large amount do occur in the first trimester.
It's significantly high.
But the Texas bill, which I think is like 6 weeks, was allowed to stand.
The Texas bill was weird. The Texas bill was very different.
It was.
It didn't set any new precedent. The reason that it sat there was because the Texas bill was written differently than other laws, which was genius. it was genius, and I love it.
Right.
The reality is that something like that doesn't necessarily have the ability to overturn judicial precedent in the same way. No. And that's what we're after.
Right, I understand.
Overturning Roe v. Wade is step one. And that's the other thing, too, is like even if Roe v. Wade is fully overturned, we need to realize that that's only step one.
Oh, I'm a little bit more hopeful in this fact that I have been around enough pro-lifers that are like actively engaged in the movement that I do believe I don't think that overturning Roe v. Wade's going to make us complacent. I think it's going to make us energized and shoot us into...
I hope so.
I hope.
That would be so exciting.
And that's the impression I've gotten just from being around the people that I've been around. Now, I could be totally wrong. And I have been known to be wrong before, as surprising as it is. But...
No!
No! But anyway... I have been known to be wrong, but I'm very hopeful with this. I'm extremely hopeful.
I'm hopeful
with
as
this.
Well. I think this is the best case they've put out yet.
Yeah.
And hopefully that we'll get the decision that we're looking for. And hopefully people will use that as a springboard, because overturning Roe v. Wade has become the gold standard in the pro-life movement, but the reality is that that's not going to change anything.
Right.
Like the act of overturning Roe v. Wade,
the act will, of at most will create, there are states that have like automatic laws in place where if it's
overturned,
it would
immediately go
they,
in.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's probably like the most that would happen immediately after.
I did not know that.
Yeah. There are several, now there are also several states like California and New York that have laws in place where that will immediately codify Roe upon if it gets repealed.
That's different, though, because it's a state making its own law.
Right, no.
And I think that the argument that pro-lifers are making right now, which I actually agree with, is that the states should regulate it. I think that, obviously, ultimately, the federal government should make a law outlawing abortion.
Or at least heavily restricting it. I would prefer outlaw, but heavily restricting it to start out with.
I mean, yeah, we're on the same page with that. But at the end of the day, like, we just got to...
We gotta get there.
We gotta get there. And step one is overturning Roe v. Wade so that these laws can be a thing. And step two is getting abortion outlawed in the states. And step three
is getting a competent Republican Party that will do it.
Step four is passing it. Step five is constitutional amendment. But
yes,
that's not gonna happen.
I don't know.
I don't think a constitutional amendment will ever happen.
There's
a chance that we could outlaw it, but there's no chance that a constitutional amendment will ever pass.
There is a chance, and that chance...
Two-thirds of the states and two-thirds of both houses of Congress?
Well, here's the thing. You don't necessarily need Congress. If the states call a convention to the states...
Two-thirds of the states?
It's possible.
We need 30... So how many would we need? Would we need 33 states?
Yes, and that's... I think 34 states are controlled by Republican legislators right now.
That's interesting.
So if there was a convention of the states called...
I didn't even realize that was a possibility.
Yeah. No.
One of those states is New Hampshire, though, isn't it?
I don't know.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Either way, it's interesting.
It is. It's a very interesting scenario.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll find out in June.
Right. I am very, very, I'm expectantly awaiting June because it's going to be interesting what happens.
It really will be.
Well, we have... almost hit about an hour and a half. I think this is a good place to
call it. Yeah, it's probably a good spot.
Yeah. Micah, thank you so much for hopping on
absolutely,
today.
Absolutely, bro. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. This has been an amazing conversation. I hope to have you on again in the future. We
I'd
will
be down.
See. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you are listening on Apple or iTunes or Apple or Spotify or anything like that, please consider giving me that nice golden 5-star rating because that helps me grow this podcast. If you think we deserve 5 stars, I think Micah on his own deserves 5 stars, even if I'm not here. So
maybe 2.5.
I think I get 2.5. He deserves 5. I
deserve approximately a Chick-fil-A sandwich,
which is worth 5 stars. Anyway, so if you can give me that rate, that'd be amazing. But guys, thank you so much. God loves you. So do I. I hope you guys all have an amazing day. Have the time of your life and don't go too crazy watching the Super Bowl tomorrow. Like I'm sure both of us will.
Well, no, I actually won't. I get excited about football, but I only like lose my mind when Buffalo is playing.
Fair enough.
I almost had a seizure after Josh Allen threw that 4th touchdown to Gabriel Davis. That was wild, bro.
Thank you guys so much. Have a nice day. Adios.